Recorded live.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Pastor Eli James here, along with Pastor William Fink, and it looks like a fine crew of people in the chat room. Saints, all of you, I'm sure. Obedient to the law, and you hate Obama, right? And that's where we all should be, okay? Hating tyranny. Paul never said that we should obey tyrants, okay? And our founding fathers, by the way, they all believed in the rule of law, and although Thomas Jefferson also felt that Paul was an antinomian, and he tore all those pages that he thought were antinomian in context, or content, and tore them out of the Bible and issued a Bible without those passages, right? So he wasn't a Christian. No, he was a deist, okay? So this is all a false history that we're being peddled by the Jewish establishment these days. Okay, how are you doing, Bill?
Wonderful. Praise Yahweh.
Yeah, praise Yahweh, because I was looking at the next two chapters coming up, and the first six are all fire and brimstone, you know. And I was just thinking the utter lack of fire and brimstone preaching today, which has all been replaced by the gospel of personal prosperity.
And wishy-washy.
Yeah, and wishy-washy Christianity, right? I mean, it's the lukewarm church of the Laodicea. There's simply no doubt about it.
It's the church of the rape victim.
Yeah,
but
right.
We're the whore, and we're being raped by the devil, and we're being told not to yell about it.
Right.
Lay back and enjoy it. That's the Jewish, Jewish philosophy.
You should not offend your rapist by quoting the scripture at him, right? This is the attitude of the modern churches, folks. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. Okay. Again, in chapter 6, let me just jump back to verse 9. I have it circled here. And they that escape of you shall remember me among the nations where they shall be carried captives, because I am broken with their whorish heart, which has departed from me, and with their eyes which go a-whoring after their idols, and they shall loathe themselves for the evils which they have committed and all their abominations. Okay? This is not true of the modern churches, folks. They practice an antinomian attitude where sin is no longer exists, and therefore obedience to the law is no longer mandatory. And they preach, as we were just saying, an attitude of don't offend the sinner. So this whole concept of us coming back to him can only be true of the remnant of true Israel, Christian identity. Okay, yeah, go ahead.
Another major illness of modern churches is ecumenicalism.
Oh, yeah.
God has no enemies. We all have our separate path to God. That's entirely anti-Christian.
That's right.
No one gets to the Father except through Christ, and he only calls the sheep.
That's right.
And God does have plenty of enemies. And we're taught that they're walking around today.
Yeah, right. And we should put them out of our company, according to Paul as well.
Right. Not only Paul, but John, 2 John 2, 9 to 11. We shouldn't even greet Antichrist.
Mm-hmm.
We shouldn't even say hello to anybody who denies Christ, unless ye share in their evil works.
Right. And the Christian churches today, so-called Christian churches, want to open their doors to every sort of abomination.
Well, basically, they've embraced the devil, and therefore they are guilty of the deeds of the devil.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely. Okay, let's continue now. Ezekiel chapter 7, verse 1. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, also, you son of man, thus says Yahweh Elohim to the land of Israel, and of course to the people of Israel as well, an end. The end has come upon the four corners of the land.
Let me just say that let's remember that the context of this chapter is still that which was set at the beginning of chapter 6. This is to the dispersion of Israel.
Right.
And to the mountains of Israel. We'll see a change in chapter 8 to Jerusalem and Judah.
Okay. All right.
But these words are spoken not to anyone in Palestine. If we follow from chapter 6, it's for Israel and not Palestine yet.
And
not Judah yet.
Right. So I think we established the context in the first set of this series here that Ezekiel was, first of all, he's a Judahite, and then he was placed in the land of the river Kibar, which
were the deported, where many, not all of them, but a great number of the deportations of the Israelites.
Of the house of Israel, right. And so this book of Ezekiel, folks, totally accepts the differentiation between the house of Israel and the house of Judah as a historical and, of course, scriptural fact, okay? And it's amazing to me, Bill, that none of the mainstream churches acknowledge the differentiation between these two houses. It never happened.
Well, right. They don't. They don't acknowledge that there still is an Israel after the deportation.
That's right. And especially the 10 lost tribes, whom the Jews cannot possibly lay any claim to, right?
Well, when we did the Isaiah series, it was proven, I thought it was proven beyond all doubt that the Celtic Saxon people were the Israelites.
That's right.
That only they could have possibly filled those prophecies
right.
concerning the deported Israelites in
exactly.
Isaiah.
Exactly. Okay, let's continue here. Verse 3, now is the end come upon you, more fire and brimstone, folks. And I will send my anger upon you and will judge you according to your ways and will recompense you upon all your abominations. We're still doing these abominations, folks. Verse 4. And my eyes shall not spare you, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense your ways upon you and your abominations shall be in the midst of you and you shall know that I am Yahweh. So when this great cleansing takes place, we will know that Yahweh is the one doing it. Verse 5, thus says Yahweh Elohim, an evil and only evil, behold, is come. An end is come. The end is come. It watches for you. Behold, it is come. So there's no way that this is not going to happen. Anybody who tells you that the judgment day is just a myth, sorry, folks, it's coming. Verse 7, the morning is come to you, O you that dwell in the land. The time has come, the day of trouble is near, and not the sounding again of the mountains. Now will I shortly pour out my fury upon you and accomplish my anger upon you, and I will judge you according to your ways and will recompense you for all your abominations. And my eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. I will recompense you according to your ways and your abominations that are in the midst of you, and you shall know that I am Yahweh that smites. When was the last time you heard a Judeo-Christian minister doing a sermon on Ezekiel, right?
Well, the fire and brimstone ministers, the last of them died out, I think, with the 1700s.
You could
now,
be.
Maybe the 19th century, maybe some in the 1800s. But yes. It's evident here that the chastisement of Israel did not end with the Assyrian deportation.
Right.
They want to end it there and forget about it. And the chastisement would be an ongoing process.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, and we're in the book of Ezekiel, chapter 7, and I just finished verse 9. Verse 8. Here we go, verse 9. And my eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. I will recompense you according to your ways and your abominations that are in the midst of you, and you shall know that I am Yahweh that smites. Okay? All of the punishments that come upon us, folks, they are just and fair punishments for our evil deeds. Verse 10, behold the day, behold it has come, the morning has gone forth, the rod has blossomed, pride has budded. Violence is risen up into a rod of wickedness. None of them shall remain, nor of their multitude, nor any of theirs. Neither shall there be wailing for them. The time has come, the day draws near. Let not the buyer rejoice, nor the seller mourn. For wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. And, of course, speaking specifically to the wicked among us. We're talking about Israelites here, folks.
I would like to go over this verse again.
Okay, sure.
The seller shall not return to that which is sold.
Okay.
This isn't talking about day-to-day transactions.
Uh-huh.
The children of Israel sold themselves in sin.
Right.
They sold themselves to the devil. They sold themselves to the enemies of God.
Yes.
Okay, and that abomination in the midst of thee, that seems to be people walking around.
Right.
And the reference to pride, okay, and we have plenty of abominations in the midst of us today, and sin causes that. We're
That's
told
right.
that disobedience will cause the strangers
mm-hmm.
among us to rise high and for us to be humbled.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what's happening in this country today.
Exactly.
Now, where it talks about the rod has blossomed and pride has budded, is it not the sinners that vaunt themselves?
Yeah,
the gay pride parades, the lesbians, the homosexuals, the race mixers,
right?
Who insist that they're doing God a favor, and they swell with pride,
yes,
in opposition to God.
Liberalism is nothing but an attitude of we are smarter than you.
well, we're smarter than anything. We're smarter than God.
Right.
There is no God, and we are God, and that's liberalism. That's the end result of liberalism and secular humanism.
Right, right. Yeah, so the modern, and this is, of course, outside the churches, but there's a fair amount of this pride within the churches as well, because they have adopted those very attitudes that the liberals have, right?
Well, absolutely.
Yes. Okay. So verse 13, for the seller shall not return to that which is sold, although they were yet alive, for the vision is touching the whole multitude thereof.
Now that which was sold, I believe, is their inheritance, their culture, and their national identity, which they left behind in Palestine.
Okay.
They're told that they're not going to return to it.
Right. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we aren't. Neither shall any strengthen himself in the iniquity of his life. In other words, you pay, you know, you may think you're getting rich by cheating people, but your end will be very grave. Grave is a good pun, right? Verse 14, they have blown the trumpet even to make all ready, but none goes to the battle, for my wrath is upon all the multitude thereof. And that's interesting. This passage reminds me of Vietnam and the current wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, where the vast majority of people are just sitting at home watching television while these wars transpire, right? And it's like, well, our sons and daughters are dying, and nobody really cares.
Well, right. Most of the nation is in a state of apathy.
Yes, total apathy, yes. Verse 15, the sword is without, and the pestilence and the famine within. Boy, we got pestilence and famine going on with this corrects it stuff, from what I've heard recently, is causing people in Florida and the Gulf Coast to develop a sore. I guess if you ingest it, or I guess if it gets on your skin, it causes lesions, and the most common lesion is a bleeding sore right around the anus, which can, you know, lead to various kinds of infection.
Now, is this the chemical that they put in the water to
It corrects it, yeah.
To try to correct the oil.
Yeah,
right.
Right. It's totally unnecessary. It's absolutely unnecessary. But they're deliberately putting this stuff in the water. Yeah. Okay. So anyway, the sword is without, and the pestilence and the famine within. It's also affecting the crops in the south, this mist of corrects it. He that is in the field shall die with a sword, and he that is in the city, famine and pestilence shall devour him. It's coming globally here, folks. Verse 16. But they that escape of them shall escape, and shall be on the mountains like doves of the valleys, all of them mourning, every one for his iniquity.
That's the hope offered for Israel and a remnant.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Verse 17. Flee to the mountains, as Yahshua Messiah puts it. All hands shall be feeble, and all knees shall be weak as water in the great day of the Lord. Verse 18, they shall also gird themselves with sackcloth, and horror shall cover them, and shame shall be upon all their faces, and baldness upon all their heads. They shall cast their silver in the streets, and their gold shall be removed.
It's no good to you.
Right.
Well, there's nothing to buy.
If you're starving and thirsting to death, gold and silver are meaningless, right? Unless they can buy you a cup of water.
Well, the Jews are telling us every day, buy more gold, buy
yes.
more gold,
yes.
buy more silver, buy silver.
That's right, yeah, and the day is coming, you know, and although the price of gold and silver are going up and up and up, when the economy crashes to the rock bottom, then all commodities will be worthless, okay? It's going to be survival time, and then food, water, and shelter are going to be the most valuable commodities on the planet, okay? Their silver and their gold shall not be able to deliver them in the day of the wrath of Yahweh. They shall not satisfy their souls, neither fill their bowels, because it is the stumbling block of their iniquity, right?
A full stomach is the stumbling block of their iniquity, yeah. People get comfortable with wealth, and they become
right.
sinners, that they let themselves They right. forget who blessed them,
right.
and they slip into iniquity.
Right, right. And so the attitude of greed, which the Jews have taught us how to do and be, right?
Well, this is the consumer society.
Right.
I need a bigger pickup truck, and I need a bigger big screen TV.
Yeah, and a bigger mortgage.
and debt, debt, debt.
Yes, right. Debt, 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 death, 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 right? Verse 20, as for the beauty of his ornament, he set it in majesty, but they made the images of their abominations. And, of course, you can probably put the images of the abominations, the Supreme Court justices. Here we go. The liberals worship human beings. Elena Kagan, right, and Martin Luther King, et cetera, et cetera. They have their own idols, don't they?
Absolutely.
Yes.
What a ugly crew it is.
Right. I haven't
but, you know,
mentioned...
those ancient Hittite idols were pretty ugly, too.
That's right.
In fact, they looked just like Elena Kagan.
That's right. They looked just like her, right?
They were short and fat and had big, thick lips and dumpy.
Right.
And...
Exactly. Right. As for the beauty of his ornament, he set it in majesty, but they made the images of their abominations and of their detestable things therein. Therefore have I set it far from them. Of course, the Jews have taught us how to be idol worshippers again, just like they did in ancient Canaan land. Right? The very reason why Yahweh set these people adrift into the wilderness and caused our migrations westward. We've begun doing the same things again today. Verse 21, and I will give it into the hands of the strangers for a prey. Look at all the Mexicans and blacks taking advantage of true Israel, folks.
Exactly.
We are their prey. And to the wicked of the earth for a spoil, and they shall pollute it. In fact, it's a better translation here in the note of my King James here. Foreigners for plunder. Strangers for a prey. Foreigners are plundering us, folks. Verse 22. My face will I turn also from them, and they shall pollute my secret place. The pulpits have been polluted, folks.
Well, no, I don't even see that as the pulpit. I think that's the temple of ours, yeah, you know, of our race.
Okay,
it's,
sure.
It's not, yeah, you know, they're taking our daughters and our sons.
Yes. Yes, for the robbers shall enter into it and defile it.
Right, right, and that has a parallel with the temple of Jerusalem and the city of Jerusalem. But, I mean, in the New Testament period, and it's been this way
mm-hmm.
through all Adamic history.
Right, right.
However, we had a symbol of God's dwelling in the
Ark
temple
of the Covenant.
In Israel.
Right.
And in the Ark of the Covenant. But the real dwelling of God is the temple of our body.
Right.
If we
exactly.
do his will, he will come and make his dwelling with us.
Exactly. Very good.
And that's yes. his secret place, and that's being defiled. Look at all the white women in bed with animals.
That's right.
That's the secret places of Yahweh are being defiled.
Mm-hmm. 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 Let me read verse 22 again. My face will I turn also from them. And they shall pollute my secret place, for the robber shall enter into it and defile it. Boy, are we being defiled today. Verse 23, make a chain, for the land is full of bloody crimes, and the city is full of violence. Wherefore, I will bring the... You know, and of course, the churches are ignoring all this violence, as if it's not happening. We're all saved, Bill. Don't you know that? We're saved.
Well,
none
they're absolutely
violence
ignoring
is happening.
It. They're ignoring. They have to ignore it because to observe the violence is to admit the perpetrators of the violence.
That's right. And to admit that they're wrong, that it indeed is happening. Okay. Verse 25. Well, it's in verse 24. Wherefore I will bring the worst of the heathen, and they shall possess their houses.
Now, how many Negroes have taken over? How many American cities have been taken over by Negroes the last 50 years?
Right, right, right. And then they're giving, well, the white people are losing their homes to debt foreclosure, and it's been being given to illegal aliens.
Well,
right?
Well, I see this as a punishment. You know, this is not far-fetched. This is the history of our nation.
That's right.
We voted... out, not us, but our grandparents voted for their stomachs
right.
when they voted for FDR.
Right.
That they
yeah.
voted for
and
politicians
LBJ.
And LBJ, and even back to Woodrow Wilson and before that, they began voting for politicians who would give them something
right.
that was somebody else's. They began
right.
voting for legalized stealing.
Right.
And when that happened, this country
yeah.
started on a downward slide, and we ended up with the Federal Reserve, and we ended up with the slaughter of our own sons and our own cousins
mm-hmm.
in the two world wars, and it's gotten worse ever since. But people haven't looked back at the last generation or the one before that and thought to themselves, what went wrong?
Mm-hmm.
They continue the trend of voting for their own bellies with even more fervor.
Right.
With even greater fervor.
Well, yeah, because, the way it works, in Chicago it's called patronage, okay? In D.C. it's called welfare, but the reality is it's communism, okay? So we've been voting for communism, and now we are getting the due results of voting for communism. We are being enslaved. It's a trick, folks. They trick you by teasing you with welfare bennies, okay? And the more you vote for welfare bennies, the closer and closer you get to communism. Guess what? It's here. Verse 25, destruction comes. It's here, folks. And they shall seek peace, and there shall be none. Mischief shall come upon mischief, and rumor shall be upon rumor. Then shall they seek the rumors about the Gulf. Is it really happening or not, right? It's all the media is lying about everything. You can never...
Well, right. You don't know which of the media. You can't trust any of the media. You don't know which of the alternative media to trust.
Right.
Because 90% of that is disinformation.
Exactly.
And that's why I don't take a position on it at all. I put a little, just for ha-has, I put a little poll up on the Christigenia forum asking what other people thought of the Gulf.
Uh-huh.
Did it happen? Did it not happen?
Right.
If it happened, who did it? Did these people do it? Did Obama go down and do it? I put it up there just for giggles. But
right.
you don't know what to believe. That's the bottom line. And you're better off not subscribing to anything.
Right.
Just sit back and watch it fall apart.
Yeah, and hope that it doesn't affect you because obviously.
Well, you pray and you try to do what you perceive to be the best of your ability to you try to do Yahweh's will and see what He wants from you every day.
Yeah.
And if you're true in your heart, that then the Christian faith is that you won't fall into a prey to the wolves.
Right. Well, mischief shall come upon mischief, and of course the sabotage of the Gulf oil rig is mischief, no doubt about that. The short selling on the oil rig before it exploded is mischief, right? Using Corexit to supposedly correct the problem is more mischief. It just doesn't end. There's just no end to it. Now, in the latest rumor, and rumor shall be upon rumor, which actually seems to be, I have to take this seriously, apparently all this mayhem in the Gulf has caused the Gulf Stream to be disrupted. And if it is totally disrupted, then, the source of warm water and warm air going to Britain and keeping Britain warm will stop, and those people better start getting their winter overcoats early, right?
Well, the Rothschilds will be Shanghai or something.
That's right. They'll just move their operations, right, no doubt about that. Well, to China, right? Because
that's where they're headed,
that's
right?
Their new
that's
home.
But they've been building up. That's why they've been building it up.
Right. Then shall they seek a vision of the prophet, but the law shall perish from the priest. The law shall perish from the priest. You see that happening?
Well, the loss of the written law is part of our punishment. The loss of justice in society is
yes.
part of our punishment. Today we have our own parallels because we have an extremely high crime rate in many places, and nobody really enforcing it.
Right, exactly. And nobody's really doing anything about it. It's just getting worse. And counsel, but the law shall perish from the priest and counsel from the ancient. In other words, we shall abandon the ancient ways, and the elders among us who are supposed to know better are doing nothing, or they're cowed into submission because the new wave. What's the verse in Isaiah that women and children shall rule over them? Well, this is a parallel statement right here, folks.
Well, absolutely.
Yes.
Now, let me say one more thing. The Jews have never ceased that their claims to be bearers of the law.
Right.
Yeah, you know, this makes them liars.
Yes. Yeah, because they have never obeyed it. Never once have they ever obeyed it.
No, but they've always claimed to uphold it and to bear it.
Right, because they redefine it every day and make new laws up to take the place of the laws of Moses, so they're always obeying their own law. Right. Verse 27, the king shall mourn, and the prince shall be clothed with desolation, and the hands of the people of the land shall be troubled. Boy, are we in trouble. I will do to them after their way. How did Paul put it? That what you sow, so shall you reap. Okay. I will do to them after their way, and according to their deserts will I judge them, and they shall know that I am Yahweh. The only problem here, Bill, is that they don't know it's Yahweh doing it to them. They still don't get it.
Well,
what's happening?
I think that in this day and age, we're told that when he sanctifies us, then our people will know. But I believe that they have to, I mean, they don't know they're suffering.
That's right.
But there has to be a whole lot of other people judged and destroyed yet.
That's right. Very good. Verse 1. And it came to pass in the sixth year, in the sixth month, in the fifth day of the month, as I sat in my house, that as the elders of Judah, okay, now we're talking about Judah, not Israel, sat before me, that the hand of Yahweh Elohim fell there upon me. Then I beheld, and lo, a likeness as the appearance of fire, from the appearance of his loins even downward, so it was an angelic being in a flame of fire, and from his loins even upward as the appearance of brightness as the color of amber. And he put forth the form of a hand and took me by a lock of my head, like a disobedient child, right? Pick him up by the hair. And the Spirit lifted me up between the earth and the heaven and brought me in the visions of God to Jerusalem.
Now here we see that, you know, this clearly shifts the focus from Israel to Jerusalem. And that's, you know, this is an entire new prophecy. It's in the sixth year, in the sixth month, in the fifth day of the month, and the first seven chapters, as Ezekiel starts off in chapter one, were a year before this.
Okay.
They were in the fifth year of the captivity.
Okay.
Of Ezekiel and of the king of Judah.
Right. And he's still in northern Mesopotamia by the river Kibar. But now this vision is concerning Judah, the house of Judah, not the house of Israel. Okay.
That's the captivity of Jehoiachin.
Okay.
Or Jehoiachin, or however.
Right, right. Okay. To the door of the inner gate that looks toward the north, where was the seat of the image of jealousy, which provokes to jealousy. And I know you have a problem with this.
Well right. There's a huge problem with this, because that jealousy, the first jealousy and the second jealousy are two different Hebrew words.
They're two different words.
And that word, that the phrase which provoketh to jealousy really only comes from a single Hebrew word. And this is a very bad translation. And it's actually here, both here and in the NAS. It's translated much the same way. Now, the first occurrence of the word jealousy comes from Strong's number 7068, kinah, which Strong's defines as jealousy. And the second one comes from a very similar word, but it's a clearly different word, and it has a different, that there's a different consonant right in the middle of it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 7069, canna, which is to procure or acquire. It's related to the word that gives us the name Cain, right?
Okay, yes, exactly.
And as a noun, it means a possessor.
Okay.
Okay? Now, readings of the Hebrew just don't distinguish between the two words here. And the Septuagint reads the end of this verse much more correctly.
Okay.
You know, this is Brenton's translation of the Greek. Where was the pillar of the purchaser?
Uh-huh.
So he interpreted this seat of the image of jealousy as, I'm sorry, the Septuagint translators, when they translated the Hebrew into Greek, interpreted the seat of the image of jealousy. Now, whether or not the Hebrew was the same originally is a different
mm-hmm.
story. But
okay.
They just interpreted that as a pillar of the purchaser.
Okay.
Now, we saw in the prior in the prior chapter, we saw that the children of Israel sold themselves into sin.
Yes.
Well, who did they sell themselves to?
Right,
and
the Canaanites.
And this here is talking about the pillar of the purchaser.
Mm-hmm.
And I was this was not, yet you know, this throne being spoken of here was not the throne of David.
Mm-hmm.
It's more than likely the throne of some banker.
Right.
Or other.
Well, this Septuagint translation that you're bringing up is very evocative of Nathan Rothschild leaning on his pillar at the stock exchange.
Well, exactly. It's very evocative of the way the Canaanite Edomites have always operated.
Yes.
In the background.
Mm-hmm.
In order to usurp and overthrow
right.
our governments.
Yes.
It's very evocative of that. I wish I could study the original Hebrew of this.
Yes.
Because it's the pattern. It fits the
good.
Pattern.
Well, they're using the stock market to con American investors out of their money by creating booms and busts, okay? During a boom, they get confidence built up and people keep on investing, and then they pull the rug out from under the market and they cash in.
Well, right. It's most evident with Obama because we have a man who was put where he sits today.
Yes.
And then we have we have the purchaser behind him always,
mm-hmm.
whispering in his ear.
Right.
That's Rahm Emanuel, right?
Right.
But, well, at this time in Judahite history, the real king was in exile, and the Babylonians had appointed someone
uh-huh.
else to be king.
Right. That was Zedekiah.
Yes.
Yeah.
They made Zedekiah king. So,
mm-hmm.
so was Zedekiah more pliable to the Canaanites
right.
and the people behind the scenes? So they
yes.
made him king, knowing that they could get away with that and do what they wanted. Yeah, you know, there's a lot of, yeah, you know, I don't think that the politics were any different then than
yeah.
they are today.
Oh, yeah, and earlier we discussed the Judean parallels, the way in which America today is being usurped in exactly the way that ancient Judea, you know, around just before the time of Christ, was usurped by the Herodians.
Well, right, but it was no different, and we're going to see that here in Ezekiel.
Okay.
It was no different.
Yeah, and the guy whispering in the ear of Caesar, that is Julius Caesar, was Herod's father, Antipater, bribing him to give his son authority, right? He basically bribed Julius Caesar.
Well, right. Actually, it was Mark Antony, I believe, that was first bribed. It was
okay.
Mark Antony that was first bribed, and he he went to Rome and had Herod made king.
Yeah, right.
That's
how they do it, folks. That's how they do it. Okay.
And at that time, you know, Mark Antony was on a triumvirate. He was an equal politically and in name.
Yeah. But hey,
not de facto, but he was an
right.
equal of Julius Caesar.
Well, if the bribe's big enough, you share it, right?
I'm sorry, of Augustus Caesar. It
yes.
was Augustus Caesar. It was
Octavian. Octavian. Okay. All right. Very good. Verse 4. And behold, the glory of the Elohim of Israel was there, according to the vision that I saw in the plain. Then said he to me, Son of Man, of course, that meaning son of Adam, son of the direct lineal descendant of Adam and Eve, lift up your eyes now the way toward the north. So I lifted my eyes the way toward the north, and behold, northward at the gate of the altar, this image of jealousy in the entry. Is this the correct jealousy here?
Yeah, well, yes, this is the same word that's image of jealousy
uh-huh.
in verse 3.
Okay.
And not the word that should be the possessor
okay.
of the later clause in verse 3.
Okay. He said furthermore to me, Son of man, see you what they do? Even the great abominations that the house of Israel commits here, that I should go far off from my sanctuary? But turn you yet again, and you shall see greater abomination. Again, he's comparing the abominations of the house of Israel now to the house of Judah. And he brought me to the door of the court, and when I looked, behold, a hole in the wall. Then said he to me, Son of man, dig now in the wall.
Now, you know, it kind of insinuates that usurpers came in.
Right.
Through this hole in the wall.
Right.
Yeah, you
right.
know, that's usually what a hole in the wall signifies.
They sneak in. Right, through the back door, usually. And when I had dug in the wall, behold, a door. And he said to me, go in and behold the wicked abominations that they do here. Well, yeah, it's the cigar-chomping guys in the back room, right, making policy while the politicians go out in public and give speeches, right? So I went in and saw, and behold, every form of creeping things and abominable beasts and all the idols of the house of Israel portrayed upon the wall round about.
Now the strange idols, and that's fine, and there's parallels in Romans chapter 1, you know, how they change the image of God into a lie and
right.
All sorts of beasts and abominations. But basically, the strange idols come in through strange people.
That's right.
And the
That's
strange
true.
Idols right. of the ancient world, It's in my paper on Christogenia called Broken Cisterns, where it demonstrates fully that the paganism of the ancient world entailed sexual fertility rituals
yes.
and demanded race mixing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it's clearly reminiscent of the sins of Baal, okay, and how the Midianite king used the lures of his women to get our men to become idol worshippers.
Well, absolutely.
Through sexuality, yes. There's always a connection between idol worship and sexuality, illegitimate sexuality among the children of Israel. Verse 11, and there stood before them 70 men of the ancients of the house of Israel, and in the midst of them stood Jaazaniah, the son of Shaphan, with every man his censer in his hand, and a thick cloud of incense went up. Then he said to me, son of man, have you seen what the ancients of the house of Israel do in the dark? Every man in the chambers of his imagery. For they say, Yahweh sees us not. Yahweh has forsaken the earth. No faith in these people, right? He said to me, turn you yet again, and you shall see greater abominations that they do. He then brought me to the door of the gate of Yahweh's house, which was toward the north, and behold, there sat women weeping for Tammuz. Who's Tammuz?
Now, Tammuz is an Akkadian and an earlier Sumerian deity.
Yes.
The Sumerian is Dumuzi, D-U-M-U-Z-I, it's transliterated into English. But it's the same character. And I noted there's later myths. Later than Ezekiel's time concerning Tammuz.
Uh-huh.
All right? But in Ezekiel's time, the only myths which I find extant are those found in the ancient Sumerian and Akkadian inscriptions,
yes.
where Tammuz is mentioned. And for instance, in ancient Near Eastern texts relating to the Old Testament, and that's a fairly authoritative book of ancient Sumerian, Akkadian, and
yes.
Hittite and Egyptian inscriptions, published by Princeton in 1969. It's about 700 pages, and from all the inscriptions that they could collect at that time, which had any relationship at all to Old Testament culture or which shed light on it, that Tammuz is mentioned about a dozen, maybe 15 times.
Uh-huh.
And several times it's only because it later became the name of a month on the Akkadian calendar,
right,
on the
right.
Assyrian calendar.
Mm-hmm.
But aside from that, none of these ancient inscriptions give any reference to the commonly told story today in certain venues of Semiramis
mm-hmm.
and the virgin birth,
right.
and Tammuz being born of a virgin.
The child.
That is all Hellenistic period invention.
Okay.
It's not in any of the ancient early stories.
So who does the original Tammuz represent?
Well, the original Tammuz was the shepherd god.
Oh, okay.
And now this is very reminiscent of the Cain and Abel story, all right?
Okay.
And Kimdu was the farmer god, and Tammuz was the shepherd god.
Ah.
And the goddess, the higher goddess, Inanna, rejects Tammuz, or Dumuzi. This is Sumerian inscriptions dating
right.
before 2000 BC, in favor of Enkimdu.
Okay.
And Dumuzi is then impelled by this goddess to boast of his superior abilities, and thus to pick a fight with Enkimdu.
Uh-huh.
And in the end, and Inanna, the goddess, was just setting up Dumuzi.
Right.
And in the end, Dumuzi, or Tammuz, is handed over by Inanna to demons, who take him away to the netherworld.
Okay.
Now the inscriptions didn't survive intact.
Yeah.
And therefore, we do not know the end of the story. But evidently, from this passage in Ezekiel, the end of the story isn't happy for Tammuz anyway.
Right.
Now
sounds
later
like
on,
Eve, Cain, and Abel. Yeah, exactly.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Now later on in Akkadian inscriptions, Tammuz is mentioned, but he's only the only time I remember him being mentioned is as a minor consort of the fertility goddess Ishtar.
Okay.
And that is more contemporary.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you, how is Ishtar related to all this? So,
right.
Okay.
That was more contemporary with Ezekiel's own time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, you know, the Akkadian inscriptions.
Yeah.
But the Sumerian inscriptions are much, much earlier.
So
now, I noticed stories in certain Christian scoffing publications and movies. I honestly forget the name of the movie. It's some straight garbage.
Okay.
But that scoff at Christianity and say it's based on earlier myths.
Yeah.
And that's just not true. The stories about Semiramis was actually a queen.
Mm-hmm.
She was a real queen of Babylon.
Right.
You know,
Nimrod's wife.
No, she's actually not Nimrod's wife.
Okay.
Okay. And I'm sorry, I don't have it handy. But she was actually, the name Semiramis comes from a living, breathing, historical queen
right.
of the 7th or 8th century B.C.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, well, this should be much later than Nimrod then.
Yes, it's much later than Nimrod. Mm-hmm. It predates, you know, the Nebuchadnezzar.
Okay.
The
mythology around her and Tammuz, so that all these images are blended together. In the mythology.
Well, yes, that's what happens.
Yes.
Babylon was destroyed by Persia, and all of the older memories of Babylon were kind of melted together into one lump because the Persian society had prevailed, and Aramaic became the lingua franca,
right.
and some of the names were picked out and commemorated, and for the most part, everything was confused.
Uh-huh.
But when you read the older Sumerian inscriptions and the newer Akkadian and Neo-Babylonian inscriptions, it's you get totally different pictures of this.
Sure.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah, the myths change, and then you know, everybody assumes that it represents the oldest reality, and of course it doesn't. You know, it's all new myths added upon the old ones. Right. Okay.
Right.
So,
well, Tammuz, yes, basically Tammuz is a real Akkadian and
mm-hmm.
Sumerian idol.
Yeah, and from your description here, if Tammuz is the product of a fertility goddess, here we have again race mixing. Okay.
Well, right. He was the consort of the fertility
yeah.
goddess Ishtar.
Yes.
But
okay.
yes, race mixing is involved, and it seems that there's a it seems to me to be a sad story of an Adonis figure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
yes.
You know, that's revered.
Right.
Like Elvis. Like an ancient day Elvis.
Yes.
Yeah, you know, because women are weeping for him.
Right.
And he's known as a lover to Ishtar, right? The
right.
fertility goddess.
Yeah.
And he's cast into the netherworld
uh-huh.
by Inanna.
Must
and,
have made great music.
yeah, right. Demons are took
yeah,
him
right.
away and he's not
right.
coming back and these women are weeping
yeah,
for him.
Right, still. Yes, exactly. All right, verse 15. Then said he to me, have you seen this, O son of man? Turn you yet again, and you shall see greater abominations than these. And he brought me into the inner court of Yahweh's house, and behold, at the door of the temple of Yahweh, between the porch and the altar, sounds very familiar to what Christ had to say about Zechariah, right, were about 25 men with their backs toward the temple of Yahweh and their faces toward the east, and they worshiped the sun toward the east. They worshiped the ancient Sumerian / Babylonian religion.
Well, right, and today we call it Islam.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, it's pagan sun worship, but that's the precursor to Islam.
Mm-hmm.
The Muslims do the same thing today, and the Jews wrote the book.
Right. That's right. You mean that literally. Most people don't realize that the, what do you call their book, the Islamic
the Quran.
The Quran.
Jews wrote it. The Jews wrote
right.
it.
Right. Muhammad
doubt.
Himself was illiterate, and so he hunted around for some people to write stuff down. and he hired a couple of rabbis.
Well, right. There were Jewish scribes, and, right. and all of Muhammad's wives were Jewish. And there is, I don't know if I could call it speculation, but there are some esteemed 18th and 19th century works that lay the claim that Muhammad's mother was a Jewess.
Okay.
And Gibbon is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And another one is Alzog's History of the Church.
Okay. Okay. Yeah, I mean, I've heard that before, you know, and it's, of course, this is something that the Islamic world suppresses. Okay.
Well, right.
And they suppress the fact he was illiterate and had to hire
Jews. And they're supposed to hate Jews.
Right, exactly. Verse 17. Then he said to me, "Have you seen this, O son of man? Is it a light thing to the house of Judah that they commit the abominations which they commit here? For they have filled the land with violence and have returned to provoke me to anger. And lo, they put the branch to their nose."
Well, now, that's an odd statement, right?
Right.
And the Septuagint, the Greek translators of the Septuagint that read the Hebrew into Greek,
yes,
they thought that had to do with scorning.
Okay, yeah, right. Giving or nose, thumbing your nose at people, maybe, if they're interpreting that way.
Well, that's the way they interpret it.
Uh-huh.
And I'm going to put a post in the forum so that people can see this actual
yeah.
image, all right? But it seems to me that there's another interpretation of this.
Okay.
That, yeah, you know, the Septuagint translators took this as a simple metaphor and thought it meant scorning. But there are commentators that say that this is a reference to what's called a barisman, B-A-R-E-S-M-A-N, or barsom,
okay.
B-A-R-S-O-M.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a bundle of sticks.
Yes.
And I have a picture of one. And
yes.
it's on Christogenia, and I just put the link to it. It's in the chat. It's Christogenia.org/Barsom,
okay.
Barsom, B-A-R-S-O-N.
Now, is this related to the Roman fascisti or fascist?
Well, it might be. It might be if we go back far, but I can't say that for sure.
Okay.
The fascis was a symbol. It was a symbol of power and strength.
Right. A bunch of
and fascis is actually from a word that means a binding, right?
Right.
But
right.
That this picture shows what's believed to be a magi, right?
Okay.
Well, he's wearing the hat, which Herodotus, the pointed cap Herodotus credited the Scythians with wearing.
Okay.
And this same pointed cap, I have instances of this same cap in archaeology in Germanic chieftains, okay, in
mm-hmm.
the first or second, the first century AD or the first century BC.
Yeah.
Okay. That I have a cup in an archaeology magazine. I don't have the cup, but
okay.
a picture of this cup in this archaeology magazine from the grave of a Germanic chieftain, and he's wearing almost the same hat, and it's a very similar hat to the hat of the king of Israel in the Behistun Rock.
Okay.
And instances of the same hat have been found on bulle of men in Palestine,
okay.
of Israelites in Palestine.
Yeah. Okay.
So this pointed hat, this Scythian pointed hat, this pointed cap is very popular wherever the Israelites went.
Uh-huh. Okay.
And we don't see any Jews wearing this cap.
Right.
But, well, it's, yeah, you know, this man here is said to be a magi, and this ritual implement, a bundle of sticks, is said to be a ritual implement, and that's what the Magi's holding, and it's said to appear amongst the Parthians, who we know are dispersed Israelites,
right.
and in Zoroastrianism. And that's, some take this to be a reference to that. I can't be positive about it,
mm-hmm.
but I'm just putting both interpretations out there.
Well, Seven of None says, Pastor Emery said that they put the branch to the nose to hide the smell of their doings, the branch being incense, cedar, or some such. I've heard that interpretation before. But for myself, being in the trades and knowing the smell of turpentine, when you have fresh cut branches exude, the odor of turpentine, which can be very, very strong, And if you've got a bunch of fresh-cut branches tied together and you're sniffing them.
Okay. Well, that would go back to why is this a ritual implement, right?
Okay, yeah.
You know, and that might be tied to that, but I can't be sure, and I'm just putting information on it.
So they may have gotten high from this, because I have gotten high, incidentally, from sniffing turpentine in an enclosed room using oil-based paint, right? Believe me, it will give you a headache, and it will get you high, kind of like a really bad alcohol high, right?
Well, you know, Herodotus wrote that the Scythians love to get high I'm paraphrasing very loosely.
Okay.
But on cannabis, which they burned in piles.
Okay.
And cannabis is actually a Hebrew word.
Okay, really?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. So, so they put the branch to the nose. Could be, you know, it sounds to me like another Canaanite ritual. That's what it sounds like here, okay? All right, verse 18. Therefore will I also deal in fury. My eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity. And though they cry in my ears with a loud voice, yet will I not hear them. Okay.
Well, Yahweh will not heed to idolaters.
That's right. That's right. That's why the Christian world is not having their prayers answered anymore. Chapter 9, verse 1, he cried also in my ears with a loud voice, saying, cause them that have charge over the city to draw near, even every man with his destroying weapon in his hand. And behold, six men came from the way of the higher gate, which lies toward the north, and every man a slaughter weapon in his hand. And one man among those was clothed with linen, with a writer's inkhorn by his side. And they went in and stood beside the brazen altar. And the glory of Yahweh of Israel was gone up from the cherub, whereupon he was of the threshold of the house, and he called to the man clothed with linen, which had the writer's inkhorn by his side. And Yahweh said to him, go through the midst of the city, through the midst of Jerusalem, and set a mark upon the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all the abominations that be done in the midst thereof.
These are the men that are not involved in the world.
Right.
Those who reject sin and abomination,
uh-huh.
and their preservation is assured here.
Right. Okay, so put an X on the foreheads of the men that sigh and that cry for all abomination that be done in the midst thereof. So it sounds like, later on we had Ezra and Nehemiah who rent their garments at the extent of the evil being perpetrated in Judah in those days. Okay, verse 5. And to the others he said in my hearing, go you after him through the city and smite. Let not your eye spare, neither have you pity. Slay utterly, old and young, both maids and little children and women, but come not near any man upon whom is the mark, and begin at my sanctuary. Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. It sounds
like judgment starts at the house of Yahweh, always.
Second Peter,
starts
right?
In our own house, always.
Second Peter chapter 2, right? Judgment begins with us, right? Then they began at the ancient men which were before the house. Now, of course, the judgment begins with the house of Israel, and, of course, the house of Judah, because in the end times the two houses will be blended back together. But it's talking about the remnant. The remnant shall be saved from the destruction. Verse 7. And he said to them, defile the house and fill the courts with the slain. Go you forth. And they went forth and slew in the city. And it came to pass while they were slaying them, and I was left, that I fell upon my face and cried and said, ah, Yahweh Elohim, will you destroy all the residue of Israel in your pouring out of your fury upon Jerusalem? Then said he to me, the iniquity of the house of Israel and Judah is exceeding great. And the land is full of blood, and the city full of perverseness.
Sounds like New York.
Yes, right. For they say, Yahweh has forsaken the earth, and Yahweh sees not. Of course, he tells us he will not have pity on the lawbreakers. And as for me also, my eye shall not spare, neither will I have pity, but I will recompense their way upon their head. And behold, the man clothed with the linen, which had the inkhorn by his side, reported the matter, saying, I have done as you have commanded me. Chapter 10. Verse
now, this is, this vision is a parable of what was to come upon Jerusalem at the hand of the Chaldeans.
Right.
But the people in Jerusalem, they didn't know this was coming.
Right.
And that's the people in this country, they don't know what's coming. They don't know that they're suffering.
Right.
They don't know they're being punished. They think everything's just fine.
Right.
And I think that we're only going to have more of that.
Okay. Yeah,
however, it's going to get worse and worse for us, but mostly for us who are awake. I think it's going to be worse and worse. The people that are asleep, they don't realize why they're being punished. They have no clue. They don't even know they're being punished.
Right.
That they know they might be out of jobs. They don't know they're being punished. That everything's hunky-dory. Everything's fine. The economy's going to recover. There's no problems. Obama's great. I might vote for him next year. That's the attitude.
Right, right. If you have a vote left, right, chapter 10, verse 1, then I looked, and behold, in the firmament that was above the head of the cherubims that appeared over them as it were a sapphire stone, as the appearance of the likeness of a throne.
And that throne, it was described the same way in Exodus 24:10.
Yes. And he spoke to the man clothed with linen and said, go in between the wheels, even under the cherub, and fill your hand with coals of fire from between the cherubims and scatter them over the city.
Now that would be the location of the mercy seat, right?
Yeah, okay.
It's coals of fire now.
Okay, right. Judgment, yeah. And he went in my sight. Now the cherubim stood on the right side of the house when the man went in, and the cloud filled the inner court. Then the glory of Yahweh went up from the cherub and stood over the threshold of the house, and the house was filled with the cloud. And the court was full of the brightness of Yahweh's glory. And the sound of the cherubim's wings was heard even to the outer court, as the voice of the Almighty God when he speaks. And it came to pass that when he had commanded the man clothed with linen, saying, take fire from between the wheels and from between the cherubims, then he went in and stood beside the wheels, and the one cherub stretched forth his hand from between the cherubims to the fire that was between the cherubims, and took thereof and put it into the hands of him that was clothed with linen, who took it and went out. So here's a hot potato, sir. And there appeared in the cherubims the form of a man's hand under their wings.
Well, which to me would be, you know, Ezekiel's mentioning this because it would be unusual.
Mm-hmm. Right.
The cherubims being winged sphinxes didn't usually have a man's hand under it.
Right. Certainly. And when I looked, behold, the four wheels by the cherubims, one wheel by one cherub, another by another cherub, and the appearance of the wheels was of the color of a beryl stone. And as for their appearances, they four had one likeness, as if a wheel had been in the midst of a wheel. When they went upon their four sides. They turned not as they went, but to the place where they had looked, and they followed. They turned not as they went. So they're just floating through the air.
Well, right. That's the description in Ezekiel chapter 1.
Yeah, right. So it's very similar, yeah, almost the same. Verse 12, and their whole body and their backs and their hands and their wings and their wheels were full of eyes round about, even the wheels that they four had. As for the wheels, it was cried to them in my hearing, O wheel. And every one had four faces, and the first face was the face of a cherub, and the second face was the face of a man, and the third face of a lion, and the fourth face of an eagle. Here we go. There's the four cardinal signs of the 12 tribes of Israel.
Okay. Now that says the face of a cherub, and that's usually in place of the face of an ox.
Right.
And I'd like to see the
see if this is a mistranslation
here. There real quick. And
the
Ezekiel 10:14 is missing in the Septuagint. It's not there.
Really?
So this verse is
could be an addition.
Likely an interpolation.
Okay.
And that's why the error is made.
Yeah. And so eagle is Dan, lion is Judah, man is the missing one, cherub would be the ox, that would be Ephraim, and man I forget which tribe.
Well, that's Reuben.
Reuben, right. Man is Reuben. Okay, those are the four cardinal signs, tribes, I should say. Verse 15, and the cherubims were lifted up. This is the living creature that I saw by the river Kibar. And when the cherubims went, the wheels went by them. And when the cherubims lifted up their wings to mount up from the earth, the same wheels also turned not from beside them. And when they stood, these stood. And when they were lifted up, these lifted up themselves also, for the spirit of the living creature was in them. They moved in unison. Verse 18, then the glory of Yahweh was departed from off the threshold of the house and stood over the cherubims, and the cherubims lifted up their wings and mounted up from the earth in my sight. And when they went out, the wheels also were beside them, and everyone stood at the door of the east gate of Yahweh's house, and the glory of God, the God of Israel, was over them above. This is the living creature that I saw under the Elohim of Israel by the river of Kibar, and I knew that they were the cherubims. And, of course, this is also reminiscent, as we pointed out in chapter 1, of the cherubims that are protecting the tree of life, and, of course, in the spirit world. 21, everyone had four faces apiece, and everyone four wings, and the likeness of the hands of a man was under their wings, and the likeness of their faces was the same faces which I saw by the river Kibar, their appearances and themselves, they went everyone straight forward. Chapter 11, verse 1. Moreover, the Spirit lifted me up and brought me to the east of the gate of the house of the Lord, which looks eastward, and behold, at the door of the gate 25 men, among whom I saw Jaazaniah, the son of Azur, and Pelatiah, the son of Benaiah, princes of the people. Then he said to me, Son of man, these are the men that devise mischief and give wicked counsel in this city. Democrats, right? Verse 3, which say, it is not near, let us build houses. This city is the cauldron, and we be the flesh. Sounds like the Statue of Liberty, New York City, right?
Sounds like the gay pride parade.
Right? Verse 4, therefore, prophesy against them. Prophesy, O son of man. And the Spirit of Yahweh fell upon me and said to me, speak, thus says Yahweh, thus have you said, O house of Israel. For I know the things that come to you, into your mind, every one of them. You have multiplied your slain in the city, and you have filled the streets thereof with the slain. Of course, again, the Vietnam War pops into my head because all of the merchants, the very rich Eastern liberals, you know, who claim to be anti-war, were profiting from the Vietnam War at the same time they were denouncing it, you know, in their speeches. Verse 7, therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, you slain whom you have laid in the midst of it, they are the flesh, and this city is the cauldron, but I will bring you forth out of the midst of it. You have feared the sword, and I will bring a sword upon you, says Yahweh Elohim, and I will bring you out of the midst thereof and deliver you into the hands of strangers, and will execute judgments among you. You shall fall by the sword. I will judge you in the border, the border of Israel, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. This city shall not be your cauldron, neither shall you be the flesh in the midst thereof, but I will judge you in the border of Israel. And you shall know that I am the Lord, for you have not walked in my statutes, neither executed my judgments, but have done after the manners of the heathen that are around about you. Okay? Now, very clearly, folks, we are Yahweh's people, and he expects us to keep his laws and to be different from the other people on this planet. Verse 13.
And there's a message here that, you know, you have feared the sword, that therefore I'll bring the sword upon you.
Uh-huh.
In other words, we should cling to his law,
right,
no matter the threat from outside.
Right.
Don't fear it, or worse will come upon us.
Yeah, we should fear Yahweh more than we fear
that's the point, yes.
Yes. Verse 13. And it came to pass when I prophesied that Pelatiah, son of Benaiah, died. Then fell I down upon my face and cried with a loud voice and said, ah, Yahweh Elohim, will you make a full end of the remnant of Israel? He can't. If he does that, then there will be no Israel.
Well, right. And Judah, you know, these are only the inhabitants of Jerusalem.
Yes.
Everybody else is taken away by the Assyrians.
Right.
And they considered themselves the remnant of Israel.
Yes, that's right. Verse 14, again, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, your brethren, even your brethren, the men of your kindred, and all the house of Israel, holy, are they to whom the inhabitants of Jerusalem have said, get you far from Yahweh, to us is this land given in possession?
Now, there is only one sensible explanation of this verse.
Okay.
That many of those inhabiting Jerusalem are not Israel,
right,
although they are claiming to be.
Right.
The Septuagint and the King James are both exactly, precisely consistent in the meaning here.
Okay. All right. Verse 16. Therefore say, thus says Yahweh Elohim, although I have cast them far off among the heathen, and although I have scattered them among the countries, yet will I be to them as a little sanctuary in the countries where they shall come. And, of course, our people were although not consciously, but they were guided by Yahweh in the Western migration, no doubt about it. Verse 17, therefore say, thus says Yahweh Elohim, I will even gather you from the people and assemble you out of the countries where you have been scattered, and I will give you the land of Israel. Okay, so
which we have shown before was not in Palestine.
That's right. It has to be a new land. Whatever land we live in is the land of Israel, right? Verse 18, and they shall come there, and they shall take away all the detestable things thereof and all the abominations thereof from there, and I will give them one heart, and I will put a new spirit within you, and I will take the stony heart out of their flesh, and I will give them a heart of flesh, that they may walk in my statutes and keep my ordinances and do them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God. Sounds just like Jeremiah 31, right?
Well, right, and for a good part of the history of Christendom, we did this.
That's right.
Except that today we have our kingdoms handed over to the beast, and we're doing what the beast does.
Yeah, well, there's also the prophecy that I will bring about one more time, one last time, the captivity of my people in Israel, and that's what's happening today.
Well, right, we've been captive since I think the two are really synonymous. It started in 1913.
Yes.
And in England, it started sooner.
Oh, yeah. Well, when the Bank of England was founded, exactly, yeah.
Well, right. Whenever we have a central bank and the enemy, the strangers are the sole possessors of the license to make our money, they own us. We're slaves.
That's right. That's right. Verse 21, but as for them whose heart walks after the heart of their detestable things and their abominations, I will recompense their way upon their own head. So we're told a million times, folks, that if we obey his law, he will be merciful, even if we don't do it perfectly. But if we reject his law, he will punish us. Verse 22. Then did the cherubims lift up their wings and the wheels beside them, and the glory of the God of Israel was over them. And the glory of Yahweh went up from the midst of the city and stood upon the mountain which is on the east side of the city. Afterwards, the Spirit took me up and brought me in a vision by the Spirit of God into Chaldea to them of the captivity. So the vision that I had seen went up from me. Then I spoke to them of the captivity, all the things that Yahweh had showed me. So now we're back.
Well, his essence has absolutely abandoned the temple.
Uh-huh.
And it never went back.
Yeah. Okay.
Until Christ was 2 years old, right? But aside from it, never went back. That was it.
Uh-huh. Okay.
It's never going back. Well, until it's all destroyed.
Right, right. Okay, chapter 12, verse 1. The word of Yahweh also came to me, saying, Son of man, you dwell in the midst of a rebellious house, which have eyes to see and see not. They have ears to hear and hear not. For they are a rebellious house.
Well, this is just like our people today, surrounded by the enemies of Yahweh and cannot even see the difference.
That's right. They don't see that they're slaves. They don't see that they're lawbreakers and that all of this is being inflicted upon them by
Yahweh.
They don't
see the strangers looting and pillaging them.
Yes, right. Murdering. And they think it's normal.
Well, look at this negress in working for the FDA that just got asked to resign, right?
Okay.
Bragging about not helping white farmers.
Right.
I think the FDA was the it was one of the major agencies.
Right.
And she bragged at an NAACP meeting about not helping white farmers.
Yeah.
White
right.
people just don't see that when a Negro gains an advantage in our nation, they see that as a conquest.
That's right.
When a Mexican or a Jew gains advantage in our nation, they see it as a conquest.
Yeah, and we think
we see it as equality.
Yeah, multiculturalism. Right.
Right, and they see it as a conquest.
That's right. That's right. Because we don't perceive our people are so good-natured and good-hearted. Yeah, goo-hearted, right?
Yes, that was the USDA. Thanks, Matt Dog. It was the USDA, the FDA. But it was one of those alphabet agencies.
Right. Our people are so good-hearted, they just don't perceive the evil coming from these people. They just don't perceive it. And of course, their churches are telling them, well, we're all equal anyway, so they're just like you. And they actually
and they're
it,
not.
So.
As soon as they get advantage over us, they're going to use that to take advantage of us, to put us down, to destroy us, because they hate us.
Right. Right. Exactly. Verse 3, therefore, you son of man, prepare you stuff for removing, and remove by the day in their sight. And you shall remove from your place to another place in their sight. It may be they will consider though they be a rebellious house. And, of course, we're talking about the fact that Yahweh has moved us from place to place to place. He's actually done us the favor of removing us from our oppressors. Okay? We don't realize that's what he's doing. Verse 4. Then shall you bring forth your stuff by day in their sight.
Now, stuff in the King James, I mean, come on.
Okay.
Yeah, you know, stuff, I would never expect to see that. You bring your stuff in the Bible. Honestly.
Yeah.
that's a hippie term, right? I mean, that's an American slang term.
Right. Is this in the original thing you hear?
Yes, it is.
Oh,
and it's actually implements or vessels.
Okay.
Throughout the chapter, it should be vessels or implements.
Okay.
Bring forth your implements by day in their
okay.
sight.
Okay, yeah.
And it is stuff. I mean, it is the way we use stuff today, but it's just an odd word to see in the Bible.
Right, that's right. And you shall go forth at evening in their sight as they that go forth into captivity. Dig you through the wall in their sight and carry out thereby. In their sight shall you bear it upon thy shoulders and carry it forth in the twilight. You shall cover your face that you see not the ground, for I have set you for a sign to the house of Israel. Okay, we should be ashamed of what we have done. Verse 7, and I did so as I was commanded. I brought forth my stuff by day and as stuff for captivity. And in the evening I dug through the wall with my hand. I brought it forth in the twilight, and I bore it upon my shoulder in their sight. And in the morning came the word of Yahweh to me, saying, Son of man, has not the house of Israel, the rebellious house, said to you, What do you? Say to them, Thus says Yahweh Elohim, This burden concerns the prince in Jerusalem and all the house of Israel that are among them. Say, I am your sign, like as I have done, so that it shall be done to them. They shall remove and go into captivity. Okay, just like Jeremiah prophesied the captivity, the Babylonian captivity of the house of Judah. Here he is doing likewise. Verse 12. And the prince that is among them shall bear upon his shoulder in the twilight and shall go forth. They shall dig through the wall to carry out thereby. He shall cover his face that he see not the ground with his eyes.
Now, this prince can't mean the king. It can't mean the king of Judah.
Okay.
It has to mean something else. It's the Hebrew word means a chief, a prince, a captain, or a leader.
Okay.
But it seems to me that it's not talking about Zedekiah.
Okay. Well, what about the predecessor to Zedekiah, the one that actually...
Well, he's already taken captain.
He's already. Well, maybe it's kind of backhanded.
And it seems to be the men that were leaders of the people in setting the bad example that maybe it's that Jehaniah.
Right.
I can't even say the word. Those people that were mentioned at the beginning of chapter 11.
The conniving politicians.
Conniving politicians. The
right.
people that the leaders that were manipulating the people.
Right.
And
right.
leading them to sin.
Yes. Okay. Verse 13. My net also will I spread upon him, and he shall be taken in my snare, and I will bring him to Babylon, to the land of the Chaldeans. Yet shall he not see it, though he shall die there. Now Zedekiah, he's not talking about having eyes put out, because he had his eyes put out and did not see. But this is talking about somebody just not looking. Verse 14, and I will scatter toward every wind and all that are about him to help him and all his bands, and I will draw out the sword after them. And they shall know that I am Yahweh, when I shall scatter them among the nations and disperse them in the countries. But I will leave a few men of them from the sword, from the famine, and from the pestilence, that they may declare all their abominations among the heathen where they come, and they shall know that we have to confess our sins, folks. Verse 17. Moreover, the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, eat your bread with quaking, and drink your water with trembling and with carefulness, and say to the people of the land, that thus says Yahweh, of the inhabitants of Jerusalem, and of the land of Israel, they shall eat their bread with carefulness and drink their water with astonishment, that her land may be desolate from all that is therein, because of the violence of them, all them that dwell in. Now, of course, it's talking about the evils being committed, you know, by the Israelites, among the Israelites, and to the Israelites, their fellow kinsmen. But I think we pointed out earlier, usually this happens with the connivance of outsiders, such as...
Well, right. There's clearly an outside influence here.
Yeah.
But the outsiders aren't responsible. The
right.
wolf isn't responsible for being a wolf.
Right.
And we should know that they're wolves, and we should know to keep them out.
Right, right.
And when we let them in, we get punished. When we embrace the enemies of God, we get punished.
That's right.
The enemies of God don't get punished.
We are their prey. Yes. Yes. Verse 20. And the cities that are inhabited shall be laid waste, and the land shall be desolate, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, what is that proverb that you have in the land of Israel, saying, the days are prolonged and every vision fails? 23, all the prophets are failing. Tell them, therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, I will make this proverb to cease, and they shall no more use it as a proverb in Israel, but say to them, the days are at hand, and the effect of every vision. Okay, all these prophecies, the true prophecies, are coming true in our captivity, and of course in the captivities of both the house of Israel and the house of Judah. Verse 24, for there shall be no more any vain vision or flattering divination within the house of Israel. For I am Yahweh. I will speak, and the word that I shall speak shall come to pass. It shall be no more prolonged, for in your days, O rebellious house, will I say the word and will perform it, says Yahweh Elohim. Again, the word of the Lord came to me, saying, Son of man, behold, they of the house of Israel say, the vision that he sees is for many days to come, and he prophesies of the times that are far off. Therefore say to them, thus says Yahweh Elohim, there shall none of my words be prolonged any more, but the word which I have spoken shall be done. Of course, not Jeremiah. Issued these prophecies directly to the people in Jerusalem.
And they happened within 5 years.
Yeah.
Because this is the sixth year of the captivity of Jehoiachin, which Ezekiel was a part of, right?
Okay.
And this Hezekiah's reign lasted 11 years.
Okay.
The destruction of Jerusalem came in his 11th year. So it happened within 5 years.
Okay. Yeah, so he's saying, I'm not going to prolong this. It's coming very soon. Chapter 13, verse 1. And the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Son of man, prophesy against the prophets of Israel that prophesy, and say to you to them that prophesy out of their own hearts. We're talking about the false priests now. Hear you the word of Yahweh. Thus says Lord God, woe to the foolish prophets that follow their own spirit and have seen nothing. Okay. John Hagee, the Jehovah's Witnesses, all of these modern prophets who have prophesied the second coming of Jesus Christ, and none of them been right. And,
well, right, and this is why I personally don't like to take positions on the things like the Gulf oil spill, the new conspiracies, because I don't have a vision,
right?
And why should I sign up to something?
Sure.
You know, why should I sign on to some conspiracy theory as if I'm rooting for a ball team, right?
Right.
And I would rather just stay on the sidelines and admit I don't know what's up with it.
Right. Yeah. And can't think of her last name now. Anyway, the Seventh-day Adventist, they thought that Jesus was coming 1844. Great disappointment, of course. And of course, I said that the judgment day would probably begin around 2012, but that was not a vision, as is basically reading the signs of the times, you know, so I don't claim to be a visionary.
Well, all the signs are here.
Yes,
but
here.
I mean, they could keep breathing life into this beast for another 30 years. We don't.
Right.
We hope not.
Yes.
But we don't know.
Yeah. Well, we know that the Federal Reserve note is getting ready to collapse. One of the things I heard recently, haven't had a chance to verify yet, is that 12 of the 16 biggest German companies that have invested in the New York Stock Exchange have pulled out. That's a lot of money, folks.
Well, the only reason why stock prices go down is because there's more stock for sale than buyers. So stock prices naturally fall.
Right.
The only reason why stock prices go up is because there's a lot of money in the economy, and people have money to invest, and there's more buyers than there are shares.
Yes.
So stock prices naturally get bid up.
It's
cause and effect. And if the stock price is going down, it's simply because people don't see it as a worthy investment.
Right.
And they're putting their money elsewhere.
Yes, they are. Whatever money they have left, right?
Well, right.
Yeah. Verse 4, O Israel, your prophets are like the foxes in the deserts. You have not gone up into the gaps, neither made up the hedge for the house of Israel to stand in the battle in the day of Yahweh. And they're letting the enemy in.
Well, that's the same thing with the modern, with
right.
the modern priests.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this whole chapter, you know, it compares, you know, the ancient.
The entire book of Isaiah did, and so does the entire book of Ezekiel.
Yeah.
They were books of impending judgment. They describe the circumstances that caused the judgment.
Right.
The judgment doesn't come before the circumstances.
That's right. That's right.
The circumstances cause the judgment. It's the natural cause and effect of the laws of the universe and the laws
right.
of our Creator. Now this this day and age today, we have the same circumstances. We should expect the same judgment.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, and you know, and that's just what amazes me, Bill, about all of these Judeo-Christian denominations. They simply don't see it coming.
Well, because they don't understand this.
Yeah, right.
They don't want to see the racial message of the Bible. They don't want to see the national message of the Old Testament.
Right.
And they want to deny it all because we're all redeemed, and that's simply not true.
That's right.
Only Israel is redeemed,
right.
and only Israel is being punished.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, and Yahweh's using the other people to punish us.
Well, yes.
That's happening, right. Verse 6. They have seen vanity and lying divination, saying, Yahweh says, and yet the Lord has not sent them. Of course, Jesus says the same thing. You know,
John Hagee says the same thing.
Yeah, right. And they will say to him, we have prophesied in your name, Lord. We have healed the sick in your name. And he says, depart from me. I never knew you.
Well,
and
every other week in this society, we have somebody putting out a book about conversations with God.
Yeah, right. Conversations with their publisher, right? And they have made others to hope that they would confirm the word. Have you not seen a vain vision, and have you not spoken a lying divination? Whereas you say, Yahweh says it, albeit I have not spoken, you're speaking in my name. Therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, because you have spoken vanity and seen lies, therefore, behold, I am against you, says the Lord God. Now, these people, these televangelists who are constantly speaking in the name of God, lying in his name, of course, they can't possibly take the Bible seriously. Because if they did, they wouldn't be speaking all these lies that they speak. They would fear God, but they don't. Verse 9, and my hand shall be upon the prophets that see vanity and that divine lies. They shall not be in the assembly of my people, neither shall they be written in the writing of the house of Israel, neither shall they enter in the land of Israel, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. He's going to make a full end of these false priests. Verse 10, because they have seduced my people, saying peace, and there was no peace, and one built up a wall, and lo, others daubed it with untempered mortar. Before we get into untempered mortar, here we have these lying priests, these lying denominations, not counselors. They don't warn against. I remember in the 60s, going to church services, they were praying for an end to war, right? Now they're praying for more war. You know, God bless our troops, send more, right? It's crazy. They're warmongering Zionists. That's what our religious denominations have become, okay? So what's this untempered mortar here?
Well, it seems that mortar is added to the text, and the word is others daubed it with foolishness.
Foolishness.
Or it's the word is 8602 tafel, and it means foolish, insipid, tasteless, unseasoned.
Right.
But it also means whitewash, which is probably an allusion to this very verse, right?
Right.
Because it's basically how the translators treated
whited sepulchers, right.
In the Septuagint, it says, and one builds a wall and they plaster it, it shall fall.
Right, right. So, and again, whatever these men do, it shall not stand, it will all fail. Say to them which daub it with foolishness that it shall fall, there shall be an overflowing shower, and you, O great hailstones, shall fall. and a stormy wind shall rend it. Lo, when the wall is fallen. Shall it not be said to you, where is the daubing wherewith you have daubed it? And, of course, we've covered up our lies with stinky, with nice-sounding words. Verse 13, therefore.
And that daubing is plastered.
Yeah, okay, but it's obviously a metaphor for covering up their lies.
Well, right, it's a whitewashing, right?
Yes.
But like that one translation says.
Yes, very good. Verse 13, therefore, thus says Yahweh Elohim, I will even rend it with a stormy wind in my fury, and there shall be an overflowing shower in my anger, and great hailstones in my fury to consume it. This book of Ezekiel is nothing but fire and brimstone, folks. Verse 14, so will I break down the wall that you have daubed with untempered mortar, and bring it down to the ground, so that the foundation thereof shall be discovered.
And that would make more sense, that I will break down the wall that you have daubed with whitewash.
Right.
That you tried so facetiously
right.
to cover what was underneath.
Exactly, exactly. And it shall fall, and you shall be consumed in the midst thereof, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. Thus will I accomplish my wrath upon the wall and upon them that have daubed it or plastered it or whitewashed it. And I will say to you, the wall is no more, neither they that daubed it. That is, the prophets of Israel which prophesy concerning Jerusalem and which see visions of peace for her, and there is no peace. Likewise, you son of man, set your face against the daughters of your people which prophesy out of their own heart and prophesy you against them. And say, thus says Yahweh Elohim, woe to the women that sew pillows to all the armholes and make kerchiefs upon the head of every stature. This is a misprint here. It must be statue.
Well, let me look, because we're a chapter beyond where I had notes, right?
Okay, yeah. To hunt soul.
Yeah, usually that's what you do to me.
Right.
Stature. Height. Height or stature, that's what it means.
Oh, okay.
Upon the head of every stature. Let me read the Septuagint.
Yeah, this doesn't doesn't make sense. It's an odd
expression. Let me start with the NAS. Sometimes that's pretty good. Thus says Yahweh God, woe to the women who sew, and they have magic, in parentheses. Bands
okay.
on all wrists, and to make veils for the heads of persons of every stature to hunt down lies.
Okay.
The Septuagint says, woe to the women that sew pillows under every elbow. That's awfully strange. And make kerchiefs on the head of every stature to pervert souls.
Okay. So in other words, the implements of their idolatry.
Well, it must be.
Yes.
It must have something to do with idolatry
right.
and implements and the things that they used in their pagan
right.
rituals
right.
and that perverted the souls of the people. That's the gist of what's being said here.
Yeah. So whatever these things are, they're kind of obscure, but this obviously they're instruments of idolatry here. Will you hunt the souls of my people, and will you save the souls alive that come to you? And will you pollute me among my people for handfuls of barley and for pieces of bread to slay the souls that should not die? And to save the souls alive that should not live by your lying to my people that hear your lies. He's talking to our preachers, folks. Wherefore thus, and of course the women who do the same thing. Wherefore thus says Yahweh Elohim, behold, I am against your pillows, wherewith you hunt the souls to make them fly. And it sounds like a gypsy woman here. Broomstick, right? And I will tear them from your arms. And will let the souls go, even the souls that you hunt to make them fly. Your kerchiefs also will I tear and deliver my people out of your hand, and they shall be no more in your hand to be hunted. And you shall know that I am Yahweh, because with lies you have made the heart of the righteous sad, whom I have not made sad, and strengthened the hands of the wicked, that he should not return from his wicked way by promising him life. Okay?
By promising him life.
Yeah,
that seems to me like universalism.
Right.
Go to the wicked, the Negroes, the Mexicans, the people of mixed race, the Jews,
mm-hmm.
and the children of Canaan, and promise them life. You'll be saved too.
Well,
all be saved.
The entire philosophy of the United Nations.
Well, yes.
Yeah. Is the universal brown man, peace, 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 and there is no peace. How many promises of peace have you heard from the United Nations? And it's nothing but war, war, war. Okay? Superb liars they are. Verse 23, therefore you shall see no more vanity nor divine divinations, for I will deliver my people out of your hand, and you shall know that I am Yahweh. So, and of course, the practice of witchcraft today, you know, it has been experiencing a resurgence. You know, you have all these movies. I can't even name them because I'm just out of the loop as far as movies. But these movies for children with kids knowing how to do magic, you know, and wizards and all that kind of stuff. And television is full of witches, okay, doing magic tricks, right? And you know, so they're seducing us again with the same stuff. The same stuff. Okay, all right, ladies and gentlemen, we've got the first 13 chapters of Ezekiel under our belts. And the later chapters get more and more specific. The prophecies get very, very specific. Very much looking forward to getting into those. But so far, the book of Ezekiel, there's more fire and brimstone in the book of Ezekiel than probably in any of the, except for the book of Revelation, because when we get in the book of Revelation, we're talking about judgment big time and fire and brimstone all over the place. And so there's many, many parallels between Ezekiel and Revelation. We'll probably, you know, compare some of those as we get into the later chapters, especially when we get into Gog and Magog, because the book of Revelation picks up on that prophecy and gives us more details. And folks, that's right. I think that's right in front of us. The battle of Armageddon between Gog and Magog, who are the Khazar Jews and their minions against true Israel.
Well, it's been going on. It's been going on for about 120 years now, 130 years.
Yes, yes.
Since this nation became flooded with them in the 1890s.
Right.
The first thing they brought us was vaudeville.
Yeah.
The second thing they did was co-opt the technology to bring us Hollywood.
Right.
That they saw the value in that immediately
for
propaganda purposes.
Yeah, they stole it from Edison.
And stole it immediately.
Yes, right. And he tried to sue them. That's why they moved to Hollywood, because there were no laws there that he could take advantage of.
Okay. That they also saw the value of radio immediately and usurped that immediately.
RCA.
Well, once we gave them the ability to make our money for us in 1913, all of these technologies were products of the Industrial Revolution of the late 1800s.
Right.
And they saw it coming, and they, as soon as they got control of our economy, they funneled all of the loans that were necessary to create this media into their own people's hands.
Right.
And basically that they didn't come to take over our media, that they made sure they had it from the beginning.
Right.
To a great extent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Bill Paley, William Polinsky, a Jew, founded CBS.
Right.
The many of the big media outlets, some of them were large American corporations that were mostly Anglo, but most of them were mostly Jewish from the beginning.
Well, Disney, there's a perfect example of an Anglo corporation that got taken over by Jews.
Yes.
Okay? They will not allow a major Anglo corporation to exist. They will take it over. Ford.
Well, it took several generations to get Ford, but they got it.
They got it. Exactly. They never tire of finagling a way to take over our economies, our corporations, our businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And even worse, they connive to suppress all of Nikola Tesla's inventions. Okay? And he had a way of, extracting electricity from the ground and even from the air, so that you don't need all these high tension wires. You don't need centralized electricity. But everything that he tried to do of value for the human race, they turned into profit. And they don't even like to recognize Nikola Tesla's existence, because they stole so much of his technology and have been using it to create stealth weapons such as HARP. They don't even want people to know that he existed. Yet, he was known personally by Woodrow and FDR, actually, because FDR was the Secretary of Defense under Wilson, and all the stuff, Tesla had to sue the government, he had to sue Marconi because Marconi stole his radio invention, okay? Yet, with all of this history of Nikola Tesla, they have wiped his memory from all the textbooks.
Well, admittedly, I can't comment on Tesla. I don't know enough.
But that's the, you know, for somebody who was so famous in his time, the fact that he is virtually unknown today is quite amazing. That's what they do, folks.
Well, when he is remembered, it's mostly for the debate about alternating and direct current, right?
Right, right, yeah. But he had his inventions were so cutting edge; they were so far removed from anything then current that it was quite amazing, you know. And so, since they're using all that stuff for stealth technology, for military purposes, they don't want us to know anything about Nikola Tesla, you know. So they're exploiting. They're exploiting one of our greatest minds here again. Okay. Great job again tonight, Bill. We're looking forward to doing more of Ezekiel next Friday. And tomorrow we're going to be doing back into Timothy, right?
Yes, tomorrow we should. I don't know if we'll wrap it up tomorrow.
Okay.
But we have 5 chapters of Timothy left.
Okay. Okay.
And we'll get 1 Timothy done tomorrow. I don't know if we'll get 2 done.
Yeah.
I would rather, you know, we only have 5 chapters of Timothy left.
Right.
After a year and a half of Paul,
yeah.
I don't think that we should rush the last 5 chapters.
Right, okay, yes, very good. And then Sunday, my guest will be Tom Sunick, and we're going to be talking about the international Rothschild conspiracy and, you know, the corporate takeover of the world, really, okay. So that's the themes for the next 2 shows. Thank you all for listening. Praise Yahweh, and Yahweh bless everybody.
Praise Yahweh.